I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The identity of this province is gleaned through a wonderful new book, Made in British Columbia, Eight Ways of Making Culture. Its author, Dr. Murray Tippett, joins me now to talk about the eight people she highlights in this book, eight people who have influenced our culture and how we perceive this province and how we're viewed in the wider world. The eight individuals are Francis Rattenbury, Martin Granger, Emily Carr, George Woodcock, George Riga, Jean Coutard, Bill Reed, and Arthur Erickson. In their respective fields, they've added much in how our consciousness has been shaped. Maria Tippett is the author of several books of cultural history, including Emily Carr, which won the Governor General's Award for Nonfiction in 1979. She has taught at Simon Fraser University, the University of British Columbia, Emily Carr College, York University, and Cambridge, where she was a senior research fellow at Churchill College. She joins me from Pender Island, British Columbia today. The book is from Harbor Publishing. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Maria Tippett. Dr. Tippett, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So, invariably, the question goes to why these eight and why only eight? I mean, you certainly could have written a book with a lot more people, I suppose.
Yes, well, I could have done all sorts of things. I could have written an encyclopedia and tried to include everybody in British Columbia, and obviously I would have left some out, probably. Or I could have done a survey, something like what I did on my book on the history of women in the visual arts in Canada, which covered several centuries. And again, it was a survey, so I couldn't deal with everyone. So I am a biographer as well as a cultural historian, and I thought, well, one of my forts is writing biographies, and one way to get around this would be to choose eight motivators, but not just write about these cultural individuals. For instance, when I'm writing about George Riga, the playwright, not just write about his plays and his life, but put his work and his plays social, historical, cultural context, so that when I write about Riga, I not just write about his famous play, The Ecstasy of Rita Joe. I write about plays that dealt with First Nations people before Riga wrote his play. There are several at the turn of the century, for example. And so I try to give the milieu, the historical milieu, in which these people and their works have arisen.
Now, we'll talk about some of these eight people individually shortly, but taken together, what do they represent? I mean, they are from the 20th century.
Yes, they all lived and made their reputations in the 20th century.
Is there a common thread amongst them all?
Not really. No. I mean, that's what makes them so interesting. I mean, for example, if we look at how they made their reputations, some of them, like Arthur Erickson, Emily Carr, Granger, and Jean Coulthard, the composer, were all helped by the fact that they came from middle-class and upper-class families who made sure they were educated, helped them to travel widely and to study widely. Others, like George Riga, who didn't speak English until he was 6 years old, came from a Ukrainian-Canadian, very small Ukrainian-Canadian community. So in many ways, these people are very, very different. Some of them made their reputations through luck. Someone like Bill Reed, he made his own luck, but it was partly luck in which he made his reputation.
Now, the First Nature, First Nations influence in all of the province's history, I mean, that's the basis through which we should look at this province, isn't it?
Well, partly, and indeed, I think I touch on First Nations peoples in every chapter.
Yeah.
Because I, again, in putting everything into a social, historical, economic context, you cannot ignore First Nations people, and this is, of course, often done. No, we can't ignore them. We can't ignore the power of the landscape, be it the sort of arid landscape of the Okanagan, or the rolling hills of the Peace Country, or the coastal vegetation of coastal BC. So yes, you know, these things do enhance, inform what the eight people I chose were doing, whether it's writing or painting or composing music.
Each of them, though, understood just how geography defines us.
Yes, yes. Certainly, if you look at Erickson, Bill Reed, Emily Carr, Francis Rattenbury, the architect, and Martin Granger, who, you know, his book Woodsman of the West, which is turn of the century, last century book, set in logging camp up the coast. Yes, of course, the landscape is certainly there.
And even those that traveled outside of British Columbia, say, to get their education, to make a living, British Columbia was still very much in the forefront of their minds in terms of their, how they perceived the wider world.
Yes and no. I think that you could say that, you know, certainly when we're talking about the culture in British Columbia, cultural history of the 20th century, I mean, culture is made from within and without, outside and inside the country. Jean Coulthard, for example, studied with famous composers like Schoenberg in New York, Dvorak. I mean, these are big 20th century composers. And you can hear in her work elements from their work. So even though she would write a piece, I mean, in fact, she wrote a suite called the Emily Carr Suite, which is trying to evoke the West Coast landscape. Even though the landscape was part of the basis of this work, the way in which she did it, the tools, you could say, came from composers, European composers, very famous European composers. So it's a melding, and the same with Emily Carr, taking expressionism from the Norwegians and German expressionist painters, but applying that or adapting that to the British Columbia landscape.
No, I've never read Martin Granger's Woodsman of the West, which you've mentioned already. That was a big deal. That was a huge hit when that came out. Does it stand up in terms of as a novel?
Well, I mean, what is interesting is that it was not a big hit here in Canada or here in British Columbia. It was a success story in the States and in Britain.
Mm.
It was written in 1908. It deals with a logging camp up north of Banfield on the coast, and people here at the time were not that interested in reading about loggers. You know, they associated loggers with those fellows they saw on the east side of Vancouver in the hobnail boots and in town for a good drink to spend all their money. So they weren't really that interested. It wasn't until the 1960s when the publisher in Toronto, McClellan and Stewart, brought out their new Canadian Library series. And what they were trying to do was to look at books like Granger's Woodsman of the West and say, look, these are worth reading. And in fact, Granger's book didn't become part of, you know, what literary scholars call the canon. Until it was published by McClellan and Stewart. So Granger is one of those people who really never enjoyed success during his lifetime. I mean, his job after he was a hand logger up the coast, he became, after H.R. McMillan, the chief forester in British Columbia. In fact, he wrote the Forestry Act. So that's what Granger was known for, certainly not as a writer, not as a novelist.
Yeah, it's funny how you have to be successful outside of whatever, you know, your country, your province, before you get some recognition at home.
Yeah, this is something that the Australians call the cultural cringe, and that is very true. It's only recently that we accept people who make their reputations here, and of course, one example is Bill Reed.
Yeah.
Who, you know, is not that well known outside of the country, but certainly is within it.
Now, you've written about Bill Reed, you've written about Emily Carr in the past. In terms of their inclusion in the book, I mean, would you consider them favorites, say, of these eight?
Well, I certainly think that Reed And we have to include Erickson, Arthur Erickson, the architect. Yes, and Carr. Most people would, their names would resonate. They say, oh, yes, you know, I've heard of Emily Carr or Erickson. But the others, perhaps not so. Even though someone like Francis Rattenbury, the architect, everybody knows the Empress Hotel in Victoria and everyone knows the apartment buildings, but they may not know that this man, Francis Rattenbury, constructed it, designed it.
Yeah, and I guess he was, well, infamous, I suppose, at the time of his death because of his death.
Yes, because his much younger wife's 18-year-old lover murdered him. The gardener, in fact. I mean, it's sort of a classic Agatha Christie story. And Granger, by this time, had moved to Victoria. I mean, sorry, moved to England because he was disgraced in Victoria for having divorced his wife and married this much younger woman, Alma.
Yeah.
So, yes, he was known more for that. And there have been plays written about him. Indeed, my lawyer friends tell me that the court case in which his murderer was trialed, that is something that law students in British Columbia and across Canada study.
The book, because these folks are from the 20th century, it evokes thought as to how this province has changed a great deal. And I think of someone like George Woodcock, for example. Could he have happened today?
No, I think it would have been very difficult. George Woodcock, as you know, was the founder of the Canadian Literature, which became the journal for literature in Canada from the 1960s onward. But also, George Woodcock made his living by his pen.
Yeah.
He was very proud of that fact. And he did this not only by publishing up to 2 books a year, and the mind boggles when you think of the work,
right.
But by writing numerous reviews and magazine articles. And we all know that if we look at our newspapers, the book review sections have shrunken. Woodcock also did a lot on the BBC, the CBC, and there too we know that the CBC has cut its cultural programs enormously. So Woodcock could not have survived, as many young writers today know too well. It's very difficult for them to survive by their pen.
When you look at these figures that you've written about in Made in British Columbia, do you have a sense as to what lasts in a culture and why?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. As to what lasts?
Yeah,
in a culture?
Yeah. What's able to sustain itself through time?
Well, I think we all have to recognize immediately that people, whoever they are, whether they're politicians or artists or writers of fame, they go in and out of interest. You know, there are periods in which people are very interested in certain writers, and then there are periods in which they're not. So I think I've hopefully chosen 8 people who will remain part of the canon, part of the touchstones for anybody interested in British Columbia or British Columbia culture. But I think we have to be cautious. Emily Carr could go out of fashion. The way in which she's been treated has changed over the years, as you've suggested.
Yeah.
Rattenbury might go out of fashion, though, let's face it, his buildings are there. Arthur Erickson, again, an architect whose buildings are in front of us, so we can't entirely ignore him. But you know, cultural figures are fashionable. They go in and out of fashion. They can remain, but they're in fashion more at some points than others.
The book also, I mean, there's some people in the book that I hadn't really thought about heretofore. And what it does is it makes me interested in their work and who they were as people. I mean, is there someone amongst the state that we ought to know more about, perhaps?
Yes. Well, certainly Martin Granger, the woodsman of the. And also George Riga. George unfortunately died in his 50s, and it's never very good if you want to make a reputation to die in your 50s. If you die like Rupert Brooke when you're in your 20s, that's fine. But don't, you know, don't die in your 50s. Riga did, although I have to say he was, by that time, I mean, he was a very, obviously a very sick man, but he had fallen out of favor with the Vancouver Playhouse, for instance, the theater company that produced his big hit, The Ecstasy of Rita Joe. But I think that we should still remember Riga, because what he did was to raise the issue in the 1960s, in 1967, of First Nations peoples, of contemporary First Nations peoples. We had tended up to that point to romanticize Native peoples in Canada. We admired their work from the past, not particularly the present, and we didn't really want to know about the Natives who we encountered on the east side. And he really did open up this issue, and First Nations peoples today will tell you that they're they wouldn't be happy with non-Native people writing about their culture today, but they did think that Riga came along at the right time to open up this subject in 1967.
Yeah, even though lots changed, a lot has stayed the same, hasn't it?
That's right, yeah. That's right.
In terms of BC's contribution to what being a Canadian is, I mean, we look to these eight that you've written about, and a lot of how Canada's perceived in the wider world comes from British Columbia.
Yes, that's true. I mean, one only has to look last year at the big Emily Carr exhibition in London, England, and, you know, getting a two-page spread in the Times and, you know, the attention that got. Woodcock, probably not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Erickson is an international figure. I think of all of the people that I wrote about, Arthur Erickson is the most international figure of them all, partly because, I mean, there are his buildings in England and in Saudi Arabia, I mean, really all over the world. But we have to remember that Canada is, there are many Canadas, there are many parts of Canada, and British Columbia is probably popular because it has become such a tourist destination, and so when people come here, if they're all interested in culture, they'll admire Erickson's museum at UBC, and you know, and they'll, if they go there, they'll see Bill Reeves' first The Man and the First Raven, and you know, all of this sort of thing. So, we have these wonderful touchstones that have made us, I think, from my point of view, more interesting than some of the other provinces. Though, if you were talking to a culturalist from Toronto, I'm sure they would say, well, look at Margaret Atwood and look at her international reputation. And they could also point to many of the artists and other writers.
Yeah, we do have a rich cultural history in British Columbia, and for people like us who live here, we tend to overlook it at times.
Yes, in fact, you know, the old, I know when I, you know, I taught at Cambridge University for years, and, you know, I'm a historian of culture in Canada, and I wasn't even saying British Columbia, I was saying Canada, and they would say, well, is there any?
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say to them, well, British Columbia, one of the younger provinces, when Captain Cook arrived in 1778, you know, one of the first Europeans to make landfall on Vancouver Island, the West Coast Native culture was rich. It had, you know, been going on for a millennium. So, sure, you know, our culture is old. And at the moment, I'm writing a book on the history of sculpture in Canada. And again, I thought immediately when I began, oh, well, you know, I guess this will really begin with Cabot in, you know, in the 16th century, you know, early Quebecois sculpture. But
mm-hmm.
But I've actually found pieces from 12,000 B.C.
Really?
That were carved from mammoth bones in the Bluefish Caves in the Yukon. So, you know, are we a young country? Do we have a young cultural history? I don't think so.
Yeah, and this book, Dr. Tippett, is a marvelous way to get into it, and it's a marvelous start in terms of the conversations that we ought to be having in this country about ourselves.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a great book. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
The book is called Made in British Columbia, 8 Ways of Making Culture. It's from Harbor Publishing. It's author Dr. Maria Tippett. Join me on the line from Pender Island in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.